In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, March 16th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Friday at 3 is the Federal News Countdown, and this week, two experts in the world of the federal government choosing the news stories they think are most important this week, ranking them in order, and joining me in the studio to count them down on the Federal News Countdown. Happy to have on the program for the first time Jennifer Mattingly. She's Director of Government Affairs for Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. It's great to see you, Jenny.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You're in here a lot to do Fed Talk,
correct,
which is Friday mornings at 11 on Federal News Radio, and you were just mentioning that it's a little odd to be on the other side of the microphone.
Absolutely. Running the show.
That's right. Well, it's great to have you, and you've chosen three great stories. Looking forward to counting them down. And my other guest this week is Josh Soslack. He is a senior fellow at the Telework Exchange, member of the American Institute of Certified Planners, and former senior advisor to the administrator at the General Services Administration. Nice to see you again.
It's great to be here, Francis, and that's a mouthful, so you got it right.
And
I'm impressed.
You've been on before. You're easily impressed, though, so
I'm
not saying much. But you've been on a number of times before, but it's been a while because you've been traveling so much. It's been hard for me to pin you down to a time.
I have been traveling. In fact, I think I was supposed to be on a couple of weeks ago, and I was sweating it out in Austin. It was rough, but, you know, food and beer, you know.
It's a shame you had to go there
somebody
and drink good beer and eat barbecue. I'm very sorry.
Somebody had to do it.
Well, I appreciate you taking care of business, and speaking of which, we'll start to do that now. The third most important federal news story of the week, according to Jenny Mattingly, is from the Federal Times. The headline is Interior Department Planning for 7% Staffing Cut. This is the first time I think we've seen a number out of the Interior Department. Is that right?
As far as I'm aware, and also the idea of planning for it ahead of time, which is a little different than just kind of moving forward.
Yeah. And one of the things that we're seeing, though, is that agencies are starting to talk about this. Eric Holder saying we might have to furlough or lay off up to 100,000 people if sequestration happens.
Right.
Are we going to see more of these, do you think, over the next couple months?
I think so, especially as we've got Congress is going to start rolling out their budgets over the next week or two here. You've got Congressman Paul Ryan's going to come out with a GOP budget here shortly, and already stories are leaking about that they're going to take defense out of sequestration. So all of a sudden, the burden's on agencies. If you've got left is discretionary spending,
right,
we're going to see a lot of these stories start rolling out.
The story says Interior has 70,000 employees. A 7% cut would equate to a loss of 4,900 positions approximately. It was interesting to me. This says Interior Department spokesman Adam Fetcher didn't dispute the accuracy of the memo. This is a memo from Mike Connor, who was commissioner of the department's Bureau of Reclamation. And so they're not exactly confirming or denying, which is Washington speak, I guess, for this is pretty much what we're going to do without saying this is what we're going to do.
Right. Well, and I think, too, the idea, I don't think anybody wants to get employees riled up about saying, guess what, you could be on the chopping block.
Right.
You know, and so the idea that they're planning, because farther down the story they say, well, this is just a plan. We don't even know if we're going to, you know, OMB says we don't know if we're going to go down this road. So now it becomes one of these, we might be doing it, we might not. And I think you're going to see a lot of that as agencies are forced to plan, and they should be planning for sequestration or for any other budget cuts that could come down. But if we don't go down that road, a plan's just a plan.
And so I wonder where we might be headed to and how much this might wind up in hindsight a year from now looking like the planning that happened for shutdowns that never
happened.
Right,
and that's what it reminds me of.
Really?
You know, we're planning. But at the same time, at least in my point of view, you should be planning.
Mm-hmm.
You should have a workforce plan. What happens if we did shut down, or what happens if we do go into sequestration? I think agencies do need to look at this, but as it becomes more public, it just ramps everything up and people get worried about it. And
Jenny Mattingly's third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is Interior Department Planning for 7% Staffing Cut. It's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Josh Soslack, your third most important story is a groundbreaker on the Federal News Countdown. You are the first person ever to choose a story from China Daily on the countdown, and the headline is Keys to Better Cybersecurity. Interesting to me that the country that we assume that a lot of cyber attacks come from is at least having some kind of a conversation about the issue of cybersecurity.
Well, as it has been reported in the press, we certainly have a lot of concerns about China and cyber. And, you know, you can't swing a mouse around the web without hitting the cyber story these days.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is really interesting because we now have the Chinese coming out, and they do have a lot of control of their media. So clearly this story did not go out with a whole lot of folks in the government understanding what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, boy, it's pretty scary out there on the Internet. And, you know, it's kind of like the Mexican cartels telling people that it's a little unsafe in the border. So I think what's really interesting about this is it says cyber is the new it. Mm-hmm. It is the new thing. Jenny talked about cutbacks. I think if you're not in the cyber field or you don't touch cyber, you really need to look at what's going to happen to all of these programs. And this, you know, both federal workers and contractors, if you are touching cyber, what we're hearing is that there's actually going to be more funding for cyber.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be, you know, a lot of that's coming out of DHS and also DOD. So if they take DOD out of the mix on the cuts and they take at least that part of DHS out of it, there's not a whole lot left. And you take the entitlements out, you know, where are you going to cut?
When you add that context that anything that we're seeing in this form is essentially coming from the Chinese government, passages like this just crack me up. A disappointing truth is that many people use even simple passwords. According to a report released by, and I'm not going to try to pronounce that, a Chinese antivirus program company, 520134 topped the list of the most commonly used weak passwords in China. This series of numbers sounds like I love you all my life in spoken Chinese. At least according to what the government says, they have the same problems in China that we have here. The Chinese equivalent of password,
yeah,
I guess, is I love you all my life.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of ones that are standard passwords that people use. It's the first thing that hacking programs look at, variations on phrases and other stuff. There's been a big, I think Google's done a big ad campaign in the Metro on using more complex passwords.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sure you know someone who's, you've gotten an email from Facebook or Google, that they're trapped in London, and their wallet's been stolen and that they're shedding a tear.
Mm-hmm.
That came to me, from a, former, Marine officer who I didn't think he was in London, and I'm pretty sure he wasn't shedding a tear.
Exactly. The other thing that I liked about this story is they kind of get a shot in at the United States in this story. It's very subtle, but the story says various kinds of password management software like LastPass, RoboForm, and 1Password are also widely used to facilitate memorizing passwords. Although this kind of software was generally believed to be safe, U.S.-based LastPass passed on a notice to users in May 2011 that a limited amount of data was accessed. Huh. Interesting that they would cite the example from the U.S. company in this story in China Daily.
Well, if you read Chinese media and like old Soviet media, there's a lot of politics in everything that you see, and there's a lot of foreshadowing. And what I think you're seeing is the Chinese saying, hey, it's a problem here too. Don't blame us.
Mm-hmm.
See, we have the same problems you do. It's not all about us.
Josh Soslak's third most important federal news story of the week is from China Daily. It is headlined Keys to Better Cybersecurity, the perspective on cybersecurity from China. And you can read it linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Second most important federal news story of the week from Josh Soslak and from Jenny Mattingly when the Federal News Countdown continues in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome to Best Buy. Can I help you?
Yeah, I've been learning about HD radio technology at HDradio.com, and I'd like to see what kind of HD radio receivers are available.
Easy answer. Here at Best Buy, we sell all kinds of HD radio receivers. Home, portables, car, boom boxes with iPod docking.
Cool. Are they expensive?
Nope. This Insignia portable HD radio player is only $49.99, and there's no subscription to listen to HD radio stations.
Sweet. Let's get started.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"When you get down to the benefits of managing data in the cloud, the benefits accrue really to the overall program, not necessarily to the technical group. And by that, I mean, we're talking about enablement. So the first benefit, and perhaps the most significant, is that the end user, the employee that is now been or is in the process of being provisioned a tablet device or some smartphone to use in the context of their jobs, but the applications aren't really tuned to work there because the underlying data structures aren't supportive of that and the data is not available in the cloud, at least not in a way that is going to meet the performance requirements of the applications."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Want to take your career to the next level? Today, there is an enormous demand for professionals who can contribute to evidence-based policy decisions. The University of Maryland's Master's in Applied Economics will give you the expertise in public policy analysis, quantitative research, and economic modeling. Evening classes will be held in the Ronald Reagan Building at the Federal Triangle Metro Stop. Earn your Master's in Applied Economics from the University of Maryland. Learn more at masters.econ.umd.edu.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
I'm Jared Serbu. Here are some of the stories we're working on for Monday's edition of the Federal Drive. Federal contractors' outlook on the future isn't as bleak as you might think, given the federal budget situation, some evidence in a new Deltek survey, and buying green energy without busting your budget, how agencies can save money on renewables by pooling their resources. Those stories and all the federal headlines Monday from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Jenny Mattingly of Shaw, Bransford & Roth and Josh Soslack of the Telework Exchange, and we are up two on the countdown.
Number two.
Second most important federal news story of the week as selected by Josh Soslack from the Federal Times. The headline is OPM Ends Flexible Schedules Experiment After Mixed Success. Now, Josh, when the results-oriented, results-only work environment pilot started, ROE, people made a big deal about it, people in government and out of government, because this has been tried a number of places in the private sector, and people said this is really innovative and this could really make a big difference in how the federal government works. And it sounds from this story like it didn't make such a big difference after all.
You know, the things like ROE, they're kind of utopian. They're really pie in the sky kind of things, and it's worth trying them because you learn a lot from trying them. But I don't think anybody, really close to this issue thought this was going to be the be-all and end-all.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason is that it's kind of like going to the end of the race, you know, showing up at the finish line of the marathon without running.
Mm-hmm. Which I've done.
That works pretty well.
Yeah, great snacks.
You don't look real sweaty, and you didn't learn a whole lot, and everybody kind of looks at you like, yeah, you didn't really do
it. Not really, yeah.
That's part of the problem is that, you know, when you think about something like telework, ROE is really, they're not the same thing. They're kind of related, maybe second cousins. But in ROE, you're saying to people, I don't care what you do, when you do it, how you do it, where you do it, just get me the thing at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And in telework, what you're saying is, I want to have a conversation with you at the beginning, this is employee and supervisor, about what the objectives are, then I want to work with you through this process. Mm-hmm. The only thing I don't care about is where you're sitting.
Uh-huh.
But I want to work with you through the process so we can get to the end. And that's a much healthier way to do it. It allows you to build that relationship between the employee and the supervisor. And from a management perspective, that is really valuable. The problem with Roe is it works okay for things that are very piecework.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to make this thing. I have to stamp these pieces. If it involves any interaction with other people, it's tough.
Mm-hmm. That's been the hardest part, too, Jenny, for the whole idea of telework and these various work plans and so on, is the collaboration piece of it, how you keep that collaboration going and keep those relationships focused on turning out whatever it is has to be turned out. Is that fair to say?
Right. And it was actually, it's interesting, because one of the things I keep hearing about is we're rolling telework out, or, you know, you see it here a little bit with Roe, is that it also only works for certain people. A lot mm-hmm. of employees are worried about what happens if I don't come into the office mm-hmm. and we're standing around the water cooler making those, you know, jokes and getting those relationships with people that then help you do your work. Or what if I'm not there and people can't see me do my job and mm-hmm. I don't, you know, they don't know that I'm actually doing what I need to be doing. And so I think there is a little bit of a fear, and when it's not clearly laid out, people don't know what to do.
So I think we have to deal with that issue that Jenny brings up about people feeling like if someone doesn't see them, that they're not going to get credit for their work. And mm-hmm. that's a really important thing, because part of the problem is that we're managing by attendance, and we need to manage by outcome and by output. And to do that, we have to say, it doesn't matter where you're sitting. I know you're working because I talk to you all the time, because I do a video conference with you. I do whatever that I would do, even if we were sitting in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, you know, you work in the same building with somebody, you still never see them.
Right.
So having them 20 feet away or 20 miles away or 200 miles away, it shouldn't really make a difference. But I think getting over that cultural issue is really the hard part.
It's interesting that we're having this conversation in the middle of the NCAA basketball tournament. I saw some report that, and I don't know what the exact number was, but some ridiculous amount of time will be lost to productivity time will be lost at work because all the games are streamed online. And so you can theoretically show up for work in the place that you have sat at your job for however many years and still not get anything done. So I wonder what it will take to do that cultural transformation, Josh, that you're talking about, where people will understand that one's not connected to the other from either end of that equation.
Right. Well, I think part of that, too, is on the management side, making sure that managers have the tools in place to, you know, one, understand how to manage employees, that they've got the training and that they know what the processes and procedures are. And some of that starts at the very top with mm-hmm. shedding the culture all the way down. And so I think it's part of its time. Part of it is just, let's be honest, human nature. People mm-hmm. are going to sit at their computers, whether regardless of where they are, and
right.
Google search something or stream something. And so, you know, you do that at home, you do it at work.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter.
Now, your former agency, GSA, Josh, is trying to be on the cutting edge of this. And a lot of people that have looked at the model that they have are saying that they're doing a pretty good job of it. The whole idea of hoteling and people coming when they need to come in and otherwise setting up structures. What's going to turn the corner on this, do you think? What's going to drive the agencies to say, we just really have to, whether it's the way GSA is doing it or somebody else is doing it or somebody in the private sector or whatever, what's going to push the agencies over the edge, do you think?
I think it's going to be a combination of factors. One is actually the constraints on the budget, because one of the things that GSA is looking at is how do we save money on real estate?
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of why they got involved in this issue, because they are the government's landlord. So I think that real cost savings, that return on investment in real estate, GSA is moving from, I think, five buildings in Washington to move everyone into a renovated headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to save them millions and millions of dollars in real estate costs. Remember, the government only owns about half of its real estate. The rest of it, the other half, is leased.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some flexibilities over time to get the portfolio smaller and save some money. The other thing is that as the workforce becomes younger, and won't actually become younger, but as younger people get more into the workforce, they're more comfortable with these styles of work and using these tools. And I think the culture will change, but you're going to need to get some of these younger folks who are more comfortable with this into management positions where they're the ones who are managing the other workers and they're comfortable with it. So I think it's going to take some time. I agree with Jeff.
As we all contemplate our navels about how all this will happen, I was reminded by a veteran of the federal government the other day that, hey, we didn't always have computers. There was a cultural shift when typewriters went away and people got PCs on their desks and all this. So it's not like this hasn't been done in government before. And I think sometimes we might get a little bit self-absorbed and think, nobody's ever done anything like this ever before. We're so unique and special. And that's really not the case.
Well, but I think there's also, I think that plays into it a little bit. But I think there's also the other side is not every employee is comfortable working from home. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've got situations where they don't want to telework, and not every job is teleworkable. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't do it. So you've got to balance. Yeah, I think there's also this idea that telework is going to be this great revolution and everybody eventually is teleworking.
Yeah.
Just doesn't happen that way.
It's not a silver bullet. You talked about the computer. Telework's just a management tool, mm-hmm. like a computer or a phone. A long time ago, not everybody had a phone at their desk.
Mm-hmm.
Soon, not everybody will have a phone at their desk because it'll be part of their computer.
Right.
It'll all be integrated. But if you look at telework as a tool for management, the GSA guys are doing a great job. I had a conversation with Tony Costa, the Chico over there, and he said, their new mantra is be where you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that really sums it up.
Josh Soslak's second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. OPM ends flexible schedules experiment after mixed success. I'm reminded as we talk about the various things that government has and doesn't have and didn't have. The first time I took my son to the American History Museum and some of the documents written out by hand, and he said, why weren't they at least typed or something? And I had to explain to him that at that point in time, there was no such thing. That's how old some of these things were. When we come back on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The second most important federal news story of the week from Jenny Mattingly on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
At Kaiser Permanente, we carefully select our doctors so you can carefully select your doctors. Our hiring process is so selective, only 1 in 10 doctors who apply make the cut. Yes, we're uber picky. Probably have a little perfectionism complex in there, but by putting our doctors under the microscope, we've discovered some of the greatest medical minds in their fields, and that's led to an even greater medical breakthrough. Drumroll, please. Award-winning care. We've received many of the highest possible rankings in member satisfaction, patient safety, overall quality of care, and more. But we're not the only ones reaping the rewards. Because we carefully select our doctors, you have great doctors to choose from. And with all those great doctors, you think it'd be easy. But try choosing just one for your primary care doctor. We'll let you create your own highly selective process for that. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you thrive. Visit us at kp.org.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Office of Management and Budget says a new 2.0 version of the government's IT dashboard will give a lot more insight into individual agencies' IT spending. Federal CIO Stephen Van Brokel says the revamped dashboard will give the public access to individual projects and activities associated with an IT investment, along with connections to funding sources. OMB hopes the more granular data will help identify duplication in agency IT projects and help pinpoint performance problems.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to gdit.com to learn more. That's gdit.com.
Welcome to today's lottery draw. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Sugar-sweetened teens. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Researchers say teenagers who eat or drink a lot of fructose, which is common as a sweetener in sodas and other processed foods, show signs of problems in their blood that could make things worse for them as grown-ups. At the Medical College of Georgia at Georgia Health Sciences University in Augusta, Dr. Vanessa Bundy looked at data on 559 teens ages 14 to 18. She checked for things such as high blood pressure and high blood sugar levels.
Adolescents that consumed more fructose had higher circulating levels of factors that are known to contribute to cardiovascular disease in adults.
Those factors also raise the risk of diabetes. The study in the Journal of Nutrition was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message brought to you by GEICO.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown, every week at the 3 o'clock hour on Friday, features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. And this week, my experts are Josh Soslack of the Telework Exchange and Jenny Mattingly of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And Jenny, your second most important federal news story of the week is from my colleague Jack Moore on federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Senate Rejects Pay Freeze Amendment to Transportation Bill. Now, this was an amendment by Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas proposing to freeze federal pay through 2013. Nobody really expected this to pass, I don't think. So I imagine you're going for, you see a broader message here.
Right. I think, we haven't seen a lot of things come through the Senate. It's usually the House mm-hmm. where we're looking at some of those anti-federal employee measures. But a couple things on this. One is that the general trend this year, which has been different than just going after federal employees, is Congress appears to have found a pot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to use it to pay for
whatever
they want. So in this case, it was, you know, gas exploration and a whole bunch of other tax breaks. And, he threw in the idea of a special deficit reduction sort of idea for some of these things. But really, the broader message is now we're looking at federal employees as a pay for rather mm-hmm. than just cuts in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm. The idea that's counter to the idea that some of these originally started as. Mm-hmm. Originally, some of these cuts were going to be just pure deficit reduction. We think there's too many. We think they're overpaid,
right.
All of that kind of jazz. As somebody who does this every day for a living, what's the change in message mean, do you think?
Well, I think some of it is just messaging. I think federal employees are an easy target. They're not necessarily politically active always.
Mm-hmm.
They go to work and do their jobs. And there's this idea out there of this bureaucrat, sort mm-hmm. of faceless bureaucrat. But when you start talking to people about who federal employees are, overall they say, oh, I love my,
yeah.
post guy. I love my
the person
you know,
I have to deal with at Social Security.
Yeah. Right. And so I think a lot of this is messaging on the part of Congress because it plays well. But I think the other part is in an age of budget cuts where everything has to be paid for, regardless of what it is. A pot of money is a pot of money,
mm-hmm.
And so I think that's some of it backed up by the fact that all these have already been proposed and passed the House.
Yeah.
So
I think the humanizing of the federal workforce is really a good thing. Remember a few years ago, Hollywood did a whole ad campaign around piracy of intellectual property.
Uh-huh.
And, everybody was like, so you buy a bootleg DVD and, George Clooney is out $8.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, big deal. And they came out and said, no, it's not George Clooney who gets hurt. It's the guy who paints the scenery. It's the guy who drives the food around. And that's where it's impacting. And they really humanized how we make the movies,
mm-hmm.
not just the movie stars. So I think it was pretty important. I think we need to do that for federal employees. We need people to understand that it's not some, back room of people who are doing nothing and making their life difficult. It's their friends, their neighbors, and it's people helping their friends and neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And that what the role of federal employees is really important, and the people who do the job, by and large, are really good at it, and they're very dedicated. They're not overpaid. If you look at what they actually do, as opposed to this measure that USA Today likes about take all of the federal workforce and average it,
and then take everybody else in America and average
it. All the guys who work at McDonald's and Starbucks and, you know, we don't have those people in the federal government. We've outsourced all that work.
Right.
So it's apples and oranges.
The unions have tried what you're talking about with some ad campaigns. And they've been the things that I've seen have been pretty good. It just doesn't seem like their reach is very great yet. OPM kind of went that direction at the end of the toward the end of the Bush administration, where they ran they made commercials about my job's really cool, or I don't remember what the slug line was, but along those same lines. But again, real limited area, places, not a lot of places really saw those or were exposed to that.
Well, because a lot of them run here in the district. It's fine to put it here, but most people here know what federal employees do, where you've got to get us out. And I think what most people don't realize is 80% of the federal workforce is not here in the district or even in this general area. They're out all around the country doing things at a, you know, at a IRS branch or a Social Security or VA or, and so, but it's hard to run a national campaign on that level and get that out there.
I think it's important that we figure out how to do that. And when the unions try to do it, they look kind of self-serving. When the administration tries to do it, they kind of look self-serving. You know, there have been some efforts by people like the Partnership for Public Service and other folks. But we really need some kind of – I mean, the politicians have to go out and actually tell people what they do. But it's too easy to beat up on federal employees when you need somebody to beat up on.
Yeah, I apologize for being so cynical, but I don't see that happening for the next 100 years or so, at least.
I hope that it changes. I hope some of the attitude in the political discussion changes.
I just don't think there's any incentive for it to change based on the positions that various people have staked out about it. That's why I'm cynical about it.
Well, and it's even gotten picked up on the presidential campaign. They've all weighed in on federal government and federal employees, so it makes it hard to tone down.
Jenny Mattingly's second most important federal news story of the week is headline, Senate rejects pay freeze amendment to transportation bill. That's our Jack Moore's story on federalnewsradio.com. It's linked up at the in-depth page at federalnewsradio.com. And that means that we are up to the most important federal news story of the week, selected by both Jenny and Josh Soslack. Their number one story's next when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues. It's the Federal News Countdown.
Are you ready to take your organization to the next level? Are you eager to learn what makes world-class organizations so successful? Then plan on attending the Quest for Excellence Conference, April 16th through 18th at the Marriott Wardman Park Hotel in Washington, D.C. Hear the senior leaders of award-winning organizations, participate in best practices sessions, and walk away with proven ways to better your organization. Visit go.usa.gov/NCZ or search online for Quest for Excellence 2012 for more information.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Do you know someone who's done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's third annual COSI Awards. Together we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike COSI and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the COSI Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search COSI Award.
Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 15. 100 AM.
This is the Federal News Countdown. Every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government count down their choices for the three most important federal news stories of the week. On In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This week it's Jenny Mattingly from Shaw, Bransford & Roth and Josh Soslack of the Telework Exchange. And we're up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by Josh Soslack, is an Associated Press story that you can find on federalnewsradio.com. Headline, Fed says 15 of 19 major U.S. banks able to pass stress test. Citibank, three others fail. Why is this a big federal government type news story, Josh?
Well, I think what's really important about this is not that a couple of them failed, but that 15 of them, the majority of them, passed.
Mm-hmm.
And what this really says is the economy is turning around. This is probably one of the best economic indicators. And what it means is as the banks get better, as they get in better financial shape, they're going to loosen up their lending. They're going to be able to lend to more people.
Are you sure they'll do it?
Yeah, because that's their business.
Okay.
The banks make money by lending money. Regardless of what the fees are that you pay on your ATM, that's not actually how they make money. They make money on interest. And the interest rates are low. Part of the reason the interest rates are low is because it's a very tight market and the Fed wants money out there. As the banks loosen up, you're going to see interest rates go up a little bit as the economy gets better. And the economy will get healthier. That is a very positive thing for federal employees because, you know, as we've been talking about, they've been taking the brunt of who do you blame for the bad economy? Let's blame the federal worker because, you know, they're the ones who did all these bad things. Oh, no, wait, that was Wall Street.
whoops.
Well, and federal employees are also going to benefit from this because it's not like they're sitting out there on this pot of money themselves. A lot of them have been hit economically, mm-hmm. too, especially folks in other areas. And so any story like this, it's good for federal employees just on an individual basis.
The other element of this that I thought was interesting was without the government's intervention in 2009 when all of this bad stuff, 2008 when all this bad stuff was happening, there would be no stress test. And we wouldn't have a concept, really, of how healthy or unhealthy the banks were in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point because what this also tells us is that the kind of regulation that we've been doing on the banks to get them to be more fiscally not conservative, but really looking at these issues and not being as risky is working.
Mm-hmm.
Because what the stress test really tests is if the economy took a turn for the worse, how would the bank do? Would we have to bail them out again? And the answer is no. They actually have the reserves and they have the things in place to ensure that they can survive what is basically a downturn in the economy. And it happens. It's cyclical. We know that. And so the banks are healthier. That means the economy's healthier. And it also means we're not going to be put in that position where we've got to bail them out again.
My only fear about your certitude that the banks will start to loan again is that many of the banks that are listed in this story, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and so on, are so profitable now without having to lend that, yes, I agree with you, the core business of these banks should be to lend money, and it was up until the not-too-distant past. But it doesn't have to be anymore, and I wonder now that if they've seen a new dynamic, if they will continue to work their business models the same way that they always have.
Well, and to be clear, I'm talking about commercial lending as
yes.
opposed to consumer lending.
I understand.
So as far as the housing market, it's going to get a little better. You're going to see those loosen up a little bit. But the commercial lending, actually loans to businesses to be able to buy more inventory, to hire people, to do all these things, that's where you start to get people back to work and get the economy rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where they make their money. And so they're going to look for opportunities to do that.
But business owners are still saying there's a lot of uncertainty about the healthcare and regulatory matters and all those kinds of things, too. I mean, that
there's some
you don't have to agree. I'm just saying this is what they're giving as reasons why they're less inclined to go and ask for a loan in the first place.
That's what the Chamber of Commerce is telling you they're saying. It's interesting that business owners are worried about or saying they're not doing things because of healthcare when the things that actually impact businesses haven't kicked in yet. So they're at the same time they're saying, well, we want to repeal this stuff. They're also saying it's stopping me from doing something even though it isn't enforced.
Well, because they don't know whether it will or will not be enforced at some point in time.
Okay, but it's not costing them money yet.
That's exactly accurate. The idea of the banks and the stress tests overall, has it been a good thing or has it really not made much of a difference? Any thoughts about that?
I think it's a good thing. I think what it's going to put some confidence back in the financial system that wasn't there.
And so to the average person walking down the street, federal or not,
I think what the average person's going to see is that the people who make decisions on Wall Street are going to feel better. And so your TSP numbers are going to go up. Your other investments are going to go up. You're going to eventually see housing prices go up. I think you're going to see it, the secondary piece of that, unless you're an economist and you're actually looking at this.
So you mentioned the TSP. So would your advice be buy more C fund?
I do not give financial advice.
Fair enough. And I put you in a corner and you stood in it nicely without getting yourself in trouble. Josh Soslak's most important federal news story of the week is from the Associated Press. The headline is Fed says 15 of 19 major U.S. banks able to pass stress tests. Citibank, three others fail. And you can read it linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Jenny Mattingly's most important federal news story of the week. We'll wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown next on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Under Governor McDonald's leadership, Virginia is moving in the right direction. Unemployment's down to 5.8%, the lowest in 3 years and lowest in the Southeast. $1 billion in budget surpluses. But Virginia Democrats are threatening to stop our state's progress, leaving Richmond without passing a budget, threatening to shut down state government to protect their own political power, putting at risk essential funding for schools, law enforcement, healthcare, and transportation. Acting more like Washington politicians than Virginia public servants. The Richmond Times-Dispatch calls Senate Democrats' refusal to pass a budget brinksmanship, driven by power and ego. The Virginian Pilot says they are obstructionists and more interested in protecting their power than doing their jobs. The Washington Post calls the Democrats self-serving and cynical. We can't let Virginia go the way of Washington. Visit PutVirginiaFirst.com. Sign the petition to support Governor McDonald's sound budget. There's too much at stake.
The Republican Party of Virginia sponsored this ad.
Hey, Caps fans! On the move but need your Caps info? Then download the official Caps mobile app to your Android, iPhone, or BlackBerry. With the Caps mobile app, you can follow the game with real-time scores and stats and access news, photos, podcasts, videos, and Twitter feeds anytime, anywhere. To download, text Caps app to 43803 or log on to WashingtonCaps.com. Stay Caps connected with Caps Mobile.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
Want to take your career to the next level? Today, there is an enormous demand for professionals who can contribute to evidence-based policy decisions. The University of Maryland's Master's in Applied Economics will give you the expertise in public policy analysis, quantitative research, and economic modeling. Evening classes will be held in the Ronald Reagan Building at the Federal Triangle Metro Stop. Earn your Master's in Applied Economics from the University of Maryland. Learn more at masters.econ.umd.edu.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Josh Soslak. And did I say Josh? I think I said it funny, though. I don't know. I have to go
Josh?
Back. And, I probably said it like Baltimore style.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know. Josh Soslak and Jenny Mattingly. And Jenny, your most important story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is Senate OKs bill allowing phased retirements and higher transit subsidy. I would guess somebody in your role as somebody who advocates for federal employees, this was a win-win for you, right?
A little bit. You know, it's one of the things where finally something went through attached to a bill that wasn't something we were fighting against all the time. So it's always nice to see that happen. I know some groups had problems with even putting a pro-federal employee thing that almost all the employee associations support and the unions, but using it to pay for something that wasn't a federal employee thing. And there was some back and forth on that. But phased retirement's been out there for years. It's mm-hmm. been a proposal that most of the employee groups have supported for years and years because we think it's a good management tool, a good workforce planning tool. And so to see it finally go through and the Obama administration picked up on it in their proposals. So it was kind of a nice thing. And it's also just the broader, you know, moving forward, we got the transportation bill through with a bipartisan vote. So what are we going to see in the House? And will this take precedence instead of the House bill, which had some anti-federal employee things in it?
The part of this that jumped out at me is folks that are doing this phased retirement deal, it says here, would have to spend at least 20% of their time mentoring younger employees.
That's right.
Now, this is one area, Josh, you and I have talked about this before, the knowledge transfer from the people who are getting out of government for whatever reason. The agencies don't have a real good track record of capturing that knowledge and managing it so that there's a resource available for people who are going to do that job next year or 5 years from now or whatever.
Like many of these kind of life cycle employment things, DOD does a much better job. They actually look at career planning.
Mm-hmm.
They look at end of career planning. They have people in their final assignments spending time teaching someone else what they know.
Mm-hmm.
They've made this huge investment. The government's made a huge investment in training people and teaching them. And, you know, you can get some of that back. It's a very valuable thing, and we can pass that information along. So it's a brilliant thing to do. We need to do more of it. We really need to focus on that knowledge transfer so we don't lose it.
Now, as far as these phased retirements go, Jenny, what's the nuts and bolts of that? What will somebody be able to do now that they couldn't do before as they try to transition out of their career?
Well, usually when you decide you're going to retire, it's kind of you're there and then you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
You pick your retirement date and that's it. This allows somebody to go down to a part-time status and then do that 20% mentoring as well without penalizing their annuity long-term.
Doesn't affect the high three.
Right. And so it gives people a chance to, who maybe want to retire but they're not quite there, or they really understand the need to train their successor
mm-hmm.
and want to do that. It gives them the chance to do this. And I think that's something that, especially now when we're looking at buyouts, early outs, this is going to be a really necessary tool in order to make sure that somebody's just doesn't take an early out and is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're left with a gap.
Now, say this gets signed into law. What's the measure 2 years or 5 years or 10 years out to look back at this and say, well, this is an idea. This really worked this time. What and how do we make sure that this perpetuates itself so that if it does prove to be successful, so that somebody at some point doesn't go, well, we don't know if this works, so we're just going to get rid of it.
I think it's hard sometimes to measure some of these things because it's really going to take agencies actually setting up metrics and mm-hmm. looking at their succession planning. And some of those are in place. You know, it's like anything. We have the ability to rehire part-time annuitants right now in the federal government, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's necessarily measured. But if it gives agencies the chance to not go through workforce cuts like they did in the 90s where they lost all of this knowledge because people were just out the door – and they can use this. I think 2 years from now, you'll see that if there's not this big gap in both workforce and ability to do things.
The reason I ask is because I fear that if there's money or a potential cost attached to this, and there's no definition of how to figure out if it worked or not, it leaves it open at some point in time for somebody to say, well, this costs X number of million dollars, and it's nobody knows if it's doing anything, so we'll take that money and do something else with it.
Yeah, I think it's important that you put those measurement tools into the program, and whether they put it in the legislation or it goes into the implementing reg, you know, and there's lots of ways to do it. OPM could add, you know, discuss some of it in viewpoint surveys, do some baselining,
mm-hmm.
Look at you know, do younger employees feel like they are prepared? Did they get some mentoring? If that goes up, then that's a real good thing. If it doesn't, if it goes down, it's obviously not working. So I think there are ways to do it other than the typical way, which is wait 4 years and then get a GAO report that says, you know, you did a bad job.
Yeah. The way that this fits with a story we talked about earlier, Jenny, this the idea that and we talked about the idea that a lot of these cuts might wind up affecting only people who are coming into work for the guy. That's my opinion, at least. Couple that with this idea that these are two good things for federal employees now. Maybe we shouldn't be so down in the tooth like we have been for the last year or 18 months about what could happen next.
Right. And that's something we always talk about is when you look at last year, there was so much rhetoric out there about federal employees. And there have been, I mean, to be fair, there's been a lot of legislation introduced that would cut pay and benefits or cut the workforce. We haven't seen a lot of that really pass. The change to the FERS employee contributions was for new hires, which is usually how businesses do it. It's still unclear, though, that this year we're going to be completely free from this because there are proposals. I think if the House moved their version of the transportation bill, it would probably include current, you know, changes to FERS for current employees. So last year, I think we did escape, but I think the rhetoric just makes it hard to be positive about this.
That's where we have to leave it. We're almost out of time on the countdown, but what a terrific show. Thank you very much for coming in today, both of you. Josh Soslack, great to see you as always.
Great to be here, Francis.
Jenny Mattingly, you'll be on Fed Talk again sometime before in the not-too-distant future.
Right.
Friday mornings at 11. Happy to have you, and would love to have you come back and do the countdown show again. We are ready for hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose. It's right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. All the stories that we talked about on the Federal News Countdown, linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.